From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Today, by the way, Global Oneness Day. Celebrate it well. Split show tonight, later tonight, Black Magic. Here's what's happening. NOAA forecasters estimating now a 75% chance of M-class solar flares and a 20% chance of more X-flares during the next 24 hours. The most likely source is active sunspot AR-1598. Already that sunspot erupted yesterday, producing a strong X-1 class solar flare. Mitch Batras watches the skies for us, earthchangesmedia.com. Mitch, is going to be an active year. It's not over yet, is it?
No, in many ways, it's just beginning. The original projection was for solar maximum to, or at least the apex, meaning the top of the bell curve, to be 2012. Beginning about 13, 14 months ago, they have stretched that into 2013. However, remember, we're talking about a bell curve, so we're well within what one could call solar maximum. Solar maximum being about a three-year period. So we're into that now, and it goes nowhere but up. But again, George, just to remind your listeners that there's a big difference than cycle 23. Because our Earth's magnetic field has weakened, an M-class flare is demonstrating the power of an X-class flare. So an X1 really, I think, could be classified as something like an X10, which is a huge jump. And so there's a significant difference, and a lot of it has to do with this correlation to the Earth's core. Regarding sunspot region 1598, what to watch for is that it's just now, within the next 24 to 48 hours, is rotating to what's called the solar eclipse, meridian. In other words, right in the center of the sun, kind of like an equator. Anything that occurs, say, in the next 24 to 48 hours, if it was to blast again, and it is highly charged, then it would be directly Earth-directed. It would be right in its way. Matter of fact, for some reason, they almost never do that. NASA and NOAA actually mention that in their reports that I get, watch for, is specifically 1598, I think, because it's extremely active, and it's showing that it's developing type 2 radio burst.
Well, we will watch this one, Mitch, for sure. Thank you so much. Mitch Batras' website, earthchangesmedia.com. Now, depending on the path of Sandy, now strengthening in the Caribbean, people along the East Coast during the week of Halloween could be looking at a destructive storm or simply breathing a sigh of relief. Final destination scenarios for Sandy range from bypassing the East Coast to creating a nightmare for tens of millions of people from Virginia to Philadelphia, New York City, and Boston. We'll keep our eyes on that for you. The Transportation Security Administration is removing full-body X-ray scanners from major U.S. airports and sending them to less busy locations. The TSA introduced the scanners, sometimes referred to as the naked X-ray machines, at U.S. airports in 2009. Many travelers were not happy with the naked images of themselves displayed to TSA officers in a nearby room. In addition to privacy concerns, travelers were concerned about radiation exposure. The replacement scanning machines offer less invasive, cartoon-like images of passengers, and you can even turn around after passing through the machine to see the same image that the TSA officer is reviewing. So there you go. New U.S. single-family home sales surged in September, their highest level in nearly 2.5 years. Further evidence the housing market recovery is gaining some steam there. Barnes & Noble says that devices used by customers to swipe credit and debit cards have been tampered with in 63 of its stores in 9 states. The company warning customers to check for unauthorized transactions and to change their personal identification numbers or PINs. It did not say how many accounts may have been compromised. The New York Times, citing a high-ranking company official that it did not name, reported that hackers had made some unauthorized purchases on some customer credit cards already. Lauren Weinstein with us here, expert on the Internet. Lauren, how do they get this information from a store?
Yeah, unfortunately, this involved the separate point of sale terminals. So these are the little standalone units. And those are all, they all contain software, of course, and the software can be updated. It's supposed to be updated officially by, the company that's providing them or that they were bought from. But it turns out that there are all kinds of ways to hack into these things. I mean, there have been presentations at security conferences that are just, nightmarish. The servers can be compromised. There are ways in sometimes on the local network of the store, sometimes through wireless connections, through wired connections. Sometimes the terminals can be tricked into accepting malware, in other words, the software that operates for the crooks and sends the credit card numbers and such. They can be tricked into doing that by having a specially prepared credit card, they run that special credit card through the reader. The reader then goes into a software input mode, and then that's it. So once that happens, once these machines are compromised, then all the rest of the people that come along and think they're doing a normal transaction, all of that data is potentially being funneled off to somewhere on the other side of the world, perhaps.
So they're going to have to just check their credit card statements, and if there's some fraudulent activity, do what you got to do, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, apparently what they did is the users who were at risk were notified back when this started. This was discovered, I think, around September 14th, and they started notifying them back at that point, but the Department of Justice asked Barnes & Noble not to make a public announcement until now so that they could go ahead and do investigating, before it became widely known.
Okay, Lauren, thank you so much. And as usual, your information is fantastic. AT&T activated about 1.3 million iPhone 5s last quarter, double Verizon's totals. Both companies, though, cited supply constraints for the surprisingly low number of iPhone 5s sold in the first week on the store shelves. 41-year-old car washer from northeastern Brazil shocked his family by turning up at his own wake after his family mistakenly identified a murdered local man at the morgue as him. They were both car washers. They both looked the same. So the family figured that this was our dead relative. They started having a wake for him. He had not seen his family in 4 days. So apparently a friend had said, look, they're holding a wake for you. At your mother's house, he walked in, everybody passed out or fainted. Something going on in the skies over Hecker, Illinois. They are seeing a strange UFO. Even police officers say that the object remained stationary, twinkled with red, green, blue, and orange lights, and off it went eventually. Scott Air Force Base did not report any aircraft flying in the area. Up next, Joe Taylor joins us. Giants against evolution. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Joe Taylor, owner and curator of the Mont Blanco Fossil Museum. While studying to become a commercial illustrator, Joe volunteered at the La Brea Tar Pits in L.A., which sparked his desire to find out the truth about fossils. Today's one of the nation's foremost fossil restorationists, and his work is sought out by all kinds of folks, museums, institutions in the country and abroad. What a fun job, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. It is a fun job.
How did you get into this?
Well, I just volunteered at the La Brea Tar Pits one day. I was tired of doing art. I'd gotten burned on doing the ceiling in a big mansion and decided I'd be a paleontologist. So I started working there and went back to Texas to visit my mother and found some bones. Restored them, took them to La Brea Tar Pits to the PhD guys, thinking they knew that I was using this clay stuff to restore them with, and they thought they were the real bone. I did a lot of detail, and when they found out they were the restoration part was just clay, they said you're dangerous. So eventually, I asked them. I said, "Do you think I'm become a paleontologist without going back to school?" And they said, "Yeah, we'll help you." And these guys were no friend to my religious beliefs, but because we had a passion for bones and information and raw knowledge, they included me, started giving me their books. And I thought, well, I'll just keep reading this Latin. It's a lot like Spanish. I'll figure it out. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Joe, what have been some of the discoveries that you've come across that have just been baffling for you?
Well, the first thing, the really significant thing I found were some buffalo bones way down too deep for a cow. My brother was the manager of this ranch we were on, and I thought, this is, you know, how could these be down here? And as I began to look around the canyon, I began to see there was a layer of these bones, about 20 feet thick, of buffalo bones. And they were, had been partially disarticulated, but were still associated. So they hadn't been exposed to the air very long, and then they got covered in dirt. Well, in Texas, we have rains that are so violent that it cuts these draws deeper all the time. So this must have been an environment with long, slow rainy systems, seasons, that buried these bones. Well, that was a mystery, and I started wondering about that. I went out to this little white mesa, which is in our canyon out here called Blanco Canyon, probably named so by Coronado and the Indians, the Comanches or whomever was in here. And I've been by thousands of times as a kid growing up. I lived in the Mount Blanco community. And when I found out in the early 80s that there were mastodons, giant camels, three-toed horse, giant sloth, giant hyena, and so on there, I started looking, and I was digging in a layer of solid white clay that was so viscous that you could barely wash it off your hands. It was like paint. Jeez. And I had some of it fired, and it fired really hard, and the lady told me, she said, "You ought to fire this like porcelain. I think it's porcelain." Well, in it were the remains of 7 three-toed horses, and that's still one of my most, you know, my favorite finds. And the reason I know there were 7 there, there were the left calcanea, the heel bone, if you will, of these little horses. They're about as big as a collie dog. Parts of their skulls were there, part of their bones. And in it, I found almost charcoal from plants in this white clay, and that was a mystery. I finally figured out that this hill there, the side of the hill I was on, had been a trail at one time in the past, maybe several times. And the animals would walk through there. Step on these bones, erode some of them away, and then they get covered over as the clay hill, you know, eroded. And so when I come along, they've been covered over again, and I'm finding mixed up parts from this old trail. And then I got to thinking, well, how could 7 juvenile horses, these were sub-adults, you could tell by their teeth, and that the caps on their bones weren't fused. How could these be here? You know, why would they be here in one little mass herd? Well, then I got to reading the literature, found out that most of that area out there for, gosh, 15, 20 feet is various kinds of ash, the volcanic fallout. And as I began to look around the canyon and read more, I could see this area is vast. There's a huge area that goes all the way from, well, from out here over to Lubbock, Texas, and all the way into New Mexico. That's about 100 miles, and all the way up to Amarillo and beyond. There's this white layer of clay and sand and ash, and it's just full of zebras, these big mastodons, mammoths, and you name it.
Amazing.
So I found about 30 parts of 30 or 40 mammoths, mastodons now in this area. And to think that in dry West Texas, where we don't have enough water hardly for cows, that there used to be huge herds of these mastodons and mammoths that had to have a lot of foliage and a lot of water, had to be a wet environment. Couldn't have been the cold winters that we have now. You know, okay, there's a mystery. These things shouldn't be here. If it's true, like the evolutionists say, that uniformitarianism means that what we see now is the key to the past. The present is the key to the past. Well, that's just not true. If you look at the deposits of buffalo bones, or you look at the deposits of these three-toed horses with the mastodons, giant hyenas, you're looking at Africa, and a wet Africa.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good. Yeah. Joe, what is it about bone that lasts so long? I mean, we find dinosaur bones, you know, millions and millions of years old in Pompeii, you know, crouched bodies of people, you know, when they got hit by a Mount Vesuvius. What is it about bone that lasts so long?
Well, the structure of a bone, of course, it's calcium. The structure of a bone is like, if you could blow it all up, you'd be looking at like a sponge. You know, even our teeth, human teeth, look smooth, but if you blow them up at high magnification, they're full of holes and structure. Eggshells are full of structure. So as a lot of these bones, like dinosaur bones, as well as these horse bones and pig bones above them, in many cases in South Dakota and in Texas, they're petrified by minerals. Now, in the dinosaur beds, they're impregnated oftentimes mostly by iron. And they're the whole thing, the whole animal is there, oftentimes thousands of one species buried together. So you get all this iron in mud that has no oxygen in it. Then it comes over these animals in huge, vast numbers in thick layers. There's nothing to rot the bones.
I see.
When the bones start to when the animals begin to decay, they release sulfur. Because there's no oxygen, they migrate with the sand and form these little hard iron balls. So when we're digging in a T-Rex site up in Montana, about every square meter, there's 30 of these little balls showing that these things were buried in an atmosphere with no oxygen. A lot of times, the dinosaurs are not thoroughly petrified. In fact, they're less petrified than the bones that are supposed to be a lot younger. But that mineral just goes right through the bone. And I don't know, it's really still a mystery. In South Dakota, in those ash beds up there, you'll find mastodon teeth that have a almost silver-white root, and the enamel is jet black, shiny jet black, and the dentine inside the wear of the tooth will be a creamy color. I have no explanation for it. It's all just gray ash, but something in there gets in the enamel of the teeth, turns them blue, brown, or black, and the roots are white, then the bones will be more or less gray. So, I can't explain it. I've seen trilobites in white matrix, and they're jet black.
Is that the same with human teeth, you know, a cadaver after a number of years?
Yes. Now, depending on the circumstance they're buried in, if a body is buried in a wet soil where a lot of mineral silica is coming through the burial,
okay,
you can get petrification. But it's usually dependent on, it's mostly dependent on these animals being buried in warm or hot volcanic fallout. So it basically cooks a bone. You know, if you cook a turkey or a chicken in a pot, eventually the bones become soft.
Yeah.
Well, if you did that in hot mud with silica or iron in it, eventually the bones will be impregnated by that iron because it's so soft now. Case in point, I worked on a Triceratops skeleton up in South Dakota, and the shoulder blades are long and flat. They're about 4 feet long or longer, 6 or 8 inches wide, an inch or so thick. This one was going along flat, and all of a sudden there was a bump there, like it was made out of rubber because it was laying across the rib, and which told me that at one point that bone had been like clay. And something shifted in the earth, caused that shoulder blade to just fold up over the rib, and then it went ahead and petrified in the bent stage. I know a guy found a T-Rex, and he said the leg bones were bent, but they weren't broken. So now to get all this stuff buried in hot mud, you've got to have a volcanic eruption like we cannot imagine today if the earth splits and separates by a mile, then you could have something like we see that dinosaurs buried in. The other thing that does is that complicates uranium dates. It messes up C-14 dates. Now, I could talk for hours on C-14 that we've been doing on these dinosaur bones. It's not like people think. You know, you think that we don't date dinosaur bones because they're too old. There'd be no carbon-14 in there. Well, some of my colleagues and I said, well, let's just see. So I've been sending a chemist all kinds of bones from everywhere, including mammoth bones, human bones, and dinosaur bones. And we've been sending off these major labs just, hey, see if there's C-14 in these bones. They all came back with C-14 in them, dinosaurs included. When we told the technician, he was shocked, stunned, and he couldn't take it back because he said, I did all the stuff. You know, I did what you're supposed to do. There's carbon in those bones. So
Joe, let me ask you this. If for some reason, well, we're coming up to a break. I'll ask you that when we come back. Plus, we'll get into your work, your book, Giants Against Evolution, when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Joe Taylor. He's the owner, curator of the Mount Blanco Fossil Museum. His website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He is one of the foremost experts on fossils and bone. We'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Joe Taylor, author, Giants Against Evolution, as we talk about fossils as well. Fascinating. Back with Joe Taylor. Joe, tell us a little bit about Giants Against Evolution.
The book is in two parts. One is about, half is about giant men, and the other is about giant animals. Mm-hmm. The giant men, of course, I think is probably most interesting to everybody, where people are more interested in people than anything else. And odd people, strange people, beautiful people, ugly people, little, short people, tall people are fascinating to us. And when someone, you know, when you look at a 7 foot tall basketball player, you're kind of awestruck, and they're just 7 feet. These don't even qualify as giants. As I began looking into this years ago, and especially in the last 10 years, really looking everywhere I could for this evidence, isn't just collecting stuff, and I began to see there were a lot of evidence, good evidence, that there were men out there 12, 15 feet tall. Now, you got a guy 12, 15 feet tall, that's two or three times higher than most people. And it's just, you can't explain that by, well, they just must have been healthier. You can't say they're all acromegaliacs or some disease pituitary gland problem. They're soldiers. They're buried in their armor. They got giant swords and all this sort of stuff. They have six toes, six fingers, two rows of teeth. They're generally wicked. You know, the people that dealt with them, like the North American Indians, told how terrible they were. They were cannibalistic, all this stuff. Not like ordinary people. And the thing that is a problem for evolution that I could see, you know, I was taught, you know, through high school and college that so life started off small and got bigger and bigger and more complex and finally down to us today. And you see the lineup of human so-called evolution. You start off as a fish over here and finally get up to be a six-foot-tall man. But the truth is you've got people 15, 20, maybe 30 feet tall, and there are reports in my book of some that are much, much taller, and they appear to be true accounts. There's no way to reason to reconcile that with normal health. No. So the other option is, well, is it these fallen angels that came from heaven, rebelled against God, came down here, married human women, and is that where all these giants came from? Is this the source of all the myths about gods and goddesses and war in heaven and the giants, the titans fight the gods and the goddesses and all this sort of stuff? Now it begins to make sense. But to the average person, that's just too far out. You know, it's just too far out. That's all science fiction. For the academic world, which is generally where the evolutionists, you know, apply their trade, you've got a real problem. Because they don't believe in spirits, they don't believe in God as a spirit, they don't believe in demons, they don't believe in spiritual warfare or anything to do with the spirit world, they don't believe that exists. So you're still stuck with a lot of giant human remains here with these extra digits, extra teeth, and these stories about them which aren't like normal people. So the best thing to do is just ignore them and pretend they don't exist or go, well, oh, they're probably all about 6.5 feet tall. And as a couple of writers have done very well who've gone to some of these foreign countries like in the Greece and places where they've dug up a lot of supposed giants. They said, well, they're all just mastodons. And, okay, well, probably some of them were. You know, mastodon skeletons, very similar to human. If you take the tusk out, it looks kind of like a giant cyclops.
But you would know exactly once you investigate it, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, over there in the ancient temples, they had elephant tusks. They knew they were elephants. And so you can't, you know, it's not like they'd never heard of an elephant. It was well known. And if you look at, in my book, I have a picture of Dinotherium in there. This is an elephant with no upper tusk. He's a huge animal, no upper tusk. His lower tusks come down and point at his chest. I mean, he's a very strange beast. If you found that skeleton with no head, maybe you might think it's a giant man. But if you find the head, and they mostly usually at least have the head, you know, to think that's a human skull, I don't think so, especially when they knew that there were these giant animals at one time in there, these giant elephants. So you know, once you rule out, okay, they're not all dead mastodons, they're not all giant rhinos and giant giraffes, some of these things have to be real. In fact, even if it were a mastodon, where did the story originate that this was a giant man killed by a giant man or fathered by a giant? Where would that story come from? It didn't come from looking at the mastodon. So,
that's a good point.
You know, the academics are faced with a problem, and I wondered, like many people ask me, where are all the bones? Well, there's a lot of answers to all that. But for one thing, they've been collected, you know, since the 1800s. We've dug a lot of these things up. The academic institutions have come in and said, we need those bones for study, and you never see them again. So why would they do that? Why not put them on display? They'd be more interesting to get more traffic than all the dinosaurs put together.
I think so too, Joe. I've always been told that governments are afraid to let us know that there were giants on this planet. I don't know why, but they are. Have you heard that at all?
Yeah, I have, and this is my take. To me, everybody, well, pretty much everybody, at least adults, and throughout a lot of the world, know the story of David and Goliath, don't they? Isn't that a pretty common story?
You would think so.
You'd think so. And, okay, here's Goliath. He's only about 11 feet tall. But he has these brothers, and they have extra digits. And we don't know. The Bible doesn't say. Those brothers might have been 12, 15 feet tall or taller. Maybe they sent the junior out front just to insult the Israelites.
Yeah, yeah.
But everybody knows David comes along, you know, hits a guy right between the eyes probably, pushes those two little bones in his nostrils right into his brain and kills him, and then cuts his head off with his own sword. Well, this made David's fame secure. That's not a fairy tale. That's not a myth. That's a true story. And I think that if the Smithsonian, the American Museum, the Peabody, any of these major museums were to display the remains of a giant man, people would say, well, this is like David and Goliath. Well, if that story's true, I wonder if all those other stories are true, that the do's and the don'ts of the Bible. There's the problem, and I've had paleontologists tell me that's the problem. There's the moral point to the whole thing, and the Bible makes you feel guilty, you know. If you're a drunk, you steal cars, or you do all kinds of stuff you shouldn't do. You know, everybody knows the Bible says that stuff is wrong. In fact, most societies say it's wrong. So if you can get into science, which is a limited field, and most people have never seen a dinosaur bone or a sect in a museum, they never dug one up, they wouldn't know what to do with it, they wouldn't know how to study it. The average person just has to believe what the paleontologists tell them. So if that institution has been taken over by a mindset, and I believe it has, then those guys are going to protect that mindset. You know, you hear this all the time. We can't talk about UFOs because academics don't believe it. Well, you know, now the evidence is so preponderous that you have to talk about it. And I think the same way the giants, I hope my book will show that, look, you can go check all this stuff out yourself. You know, I've shown you here, from these ancient reports, how you can tell if it's a mastodon or a human. And, you know, you have to deal with this and bring them out. You know, we talked to a museum here a while back. I won't give them the name. But they were afraid to even show us their remains because they've been, I think, so browbeat by so many people.
No, you're right. You know? In your cover, Joe, of your book, Giants Against Evolution, and that's you standing there, right?
That's me. That's me and the bone I sculpted. And
that's,
I tell people, bone. It's a sculpture, you know, but it's based on a report that I'm confident is correct.
Well, whatever roamed on this planet before, it truly is amazing. And let me ask you a question about Mars for a second, and then we'll get into some of these fossil giants from animals. If there were animals on Mars and they died tragically, catastrophically, and their bones were scattered everywhere, would they still be on that surface of that planet somewhere?
Well, you would think. It looks to me like Mars is largely iron. And iron is a friend of bones. You know, if they're real bones, iron is not the bone's enemy. So, I've seen, well, Mars is a big place. We can see a lot of photographs from NASA and never know if there were a bone up there. I don't have any reason to believe there are bones, but again, if you look at the stories of the fallen angels, there's nothing in the, I know in the scripture that says that they weren't consigned to other heavenly bodies. So that there might be a presence out there. You know, we don't have any real hard evidence, but there continues to be rumors. Perhaps they are out there. And did their giant sons and daughters who weren't really angels, did they end up out there? You know, I don't know. I thought we'd heard every weird thing there was, and now, you know, I'm not sure. Some of that stuff, some of the weird stuff has turned out to be more true than poetry.
Might we find bones, theoretically, of human beings that could be 100 million years old? You know, we've had guests on who believe that humankind could be that old. So if they're out there, buried somewhere, would the bones still be around for them?
Well, I don't think so. In fact, that presumes that there is hundreds of millions of years. And I've been in this now over 30 years and dealing with real paleontologists, most of them evolutionists, who are, you know, their standing point is the long ages and evolutionary processes. And I just don't see it. There's too much against it. I know a lot of ancient stories, the Anunnaki and all that, talk about, you know, thousands and, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of existence of these beings and all that. But there's a key to that that I think most people probably aren't aware of. The long ages isn't necessarily long ages. When they state all this stuff, it's not necessarily that long. You know, we used to think that the Egyptian, their civilization was 30,000 years old. Mm-hmm. Well, now nobody believes that. Yeah. You know, you have parallel civilizations out there in the northern and southern, and you know, it wasn't like they thought. So a lot of this stuff is it's just not well understood. The reason you can't have hundreds of millions of years, for one, there's no evidence of it on Earth. And we don't know about other planets. You just can't see the strata. You can't see the geology there. And what we can see doesn't indicate millions of years, like the moon. The moon does not indicate there's millions of years of dust on it. It's pockmarked like a big shower hit it at some point and made all those pockmarks. Or they're volcanoes. They're not sure they're volcanoes. But, for instance, in dinosaurs, we know dinosaurs were mostly egg layers. Probably not mammals, but maybe some were, or a strange mix like the duck-billed platypus. You can just mathematically figure up how many dinosaurs there would be in 1,000 years. Okay, we know they got big. Once you get big, you're invulnerable. There's nothing going to bother some of these big sauropods, the allosaurs, and some of those. You know, when you have 10,000 hadrosaurs, little harmless duckbills, buried together, and there's pits like that all over South North Dakota, Montana. There were a lot of these things, and they were surviving. Okay, you had a lot of dinosaurs on the Earth at one time, but if they had been here for 10,000 or 100,000 years, there is just no evidence of that many bones. But there are bones everywhere in the Western states. And they're buried with plants. There's plants in all those layers. And then you have the huge coal layers, which is mostly plants and dinosaurs in there. And it's just not mathematically feasible to say that there's millions of years of evidence of bones on the Earth. I know that a lot of people, you know, that wouldn't settle with them, but I've been in this now 30 years working directly with these guys, and yeah. I don't see it.
Joe, have you ever seen any bones of pterodactyls?
Yes. Yeah.
How big would a wingspan be on one of those things?
Well, Quetzalcoatlus down here in Texas is the biggest one we know of yet. And, he had the wingspan of about 45 feet.
Wow.
His neck bones look like, leg bones of an elephant almost. He's incredible.
We're still getting reports of thunderbirds. Okay. Native Americans have talked about it. So many people have witnessed large birds flying. Do you think they still exist?
Oh, yeah. I can give you some stories. I can't give you all the stories.
Give me one good one.
I'll give you one good one. Right here in Cowtown, where I live, Crosby's in Texas, I was there's a little Mexican guy here, and he was doing some yard work for me. And he saw I had bones and stuff, and he said, "Hey, Mr. Taylor, you know, I'll tell you something, man." He said, when he was 13, he was over here on the highway that runs through town and goes south, and it goes out about 5 miles and drops off into these canyons. We have pretty serious canyons out here. It's all ranch land, a lot of places where nobody goes. He was telling me, he said, when I was 13, I was standing on the porch one evening drinking Kool-Aid, and all of a sudden this big bird comes flying by. I hear his wings going, and he said, I nearly choked on the Kool-Aid. And I said, well, how big was he? All his wings were like, you know, 5 feet across. His body was like a couple of feet across. Well, that makes an 11-foot animal. That's a pretty big animal. And I didn't say anything to him. I said, well, you know, can you do a drawing? I said, did a drawing of a pterodactyl. I didn't coach him. I didn't say anything. And I said, well, now, are you a Christian? You're just trying to make the Bible believable? He said, oh, no, I wasn't a Christian, not then. He said, I'm telling you what I saw. He wasn't trying to convince me that he'd seen one. He was trying to convince me, let's go down the canyon and find it.
And find it.
He thinks it's still around.
You'd go.
I'd go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't always get on these ranches because some are owned by people that aren't there, and it's hard to get permission, you know, so you can't just run off down there like you used to could. But now that's not the only story in the Southwest here. You know, there's plenty of stories. But see, the reason these guys in the universities, they've got the ability to go check this stuff out. They got the money. They can get the car. They go down there. They get a plane ticket. They can get a motel room. Not all of us can do that.
Right.
Why don't they go study it? Why don't they go look this stuff up and you know, disprove it? I think the problem is because these guys have got their PhDs on the theory of evolution. Evolution says these things died out 65 million years ago. And they were inferior, and they were evolving into something more superior. So the animals we have today are superior to the ones in the past. That's just baloney. Anybody that digs this stuff up and looks at these magnificent beasts to think that they were inferior, you know, they're just blind. There's something wrong with their vision of this whole thing.
Joe, from the bone marrow of dinosaurs, could we clone them?
They're trying. You know, I found a piece of, I was in a little museum up in Montana, and here in this old case was what looks to be the skin on the hips of a T-Rex. So I said, may I look at them? Yeah, I got them out. I held them in my lap. My gosh, this is skin. So I got the lady to give me a little chunk of this stuff. I sent it off to California to have an electron scan to see if it's bone or muscle. And the guy writes back, he said, well, it is bone. But it's got collagen filament in it. This thing can't be but a few thousand years old. That stuff doesn't last. It can't last millions of years. Well, now Mary Schweitzer and others have found, you know, evidence of red blood cells, soft tissue, etc. There's got to be DNA in there. I mean, DNA is almost like a diamond. You can't destroy it, apparently. You know, so, yeah, I think it's – I know they're trying. Is it possible? I don't know, but they're trying real hard.
That's pretty dramatic. In your book, Giants Against Evolution, Joe, where do you get it?
You go to mountblanco.com. That's just mtblanco.com.
It's simple as that.
We have another website which has been well-received, that's called omniology.com.
Omniology? What is that?
Means everything, and ology is a study of.
Study of everything.
Yeah, study of everything is important. You know, we don't discount anything. The weather. I listen to the weather report. I listen to the stock market. I listen to the farm report. The comedy stations on that putting out all the liberal stuff, the conservative stuff. Everybody has a view. Omniology.com has just a ton of stuff that my friend put on there.
All right, that's exciting. We're going to come back, Joe. We've got a final hour to go with you. We're going to take phone calls as we talk about Giants Against Evolution on Coast to Coast AM.